When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 824, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you, who are some of our favorite people, because you tend to be pretty great. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 824. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
You having reading trouble this morning?
You can shut your face. How about that?
Rage trouble.
No, I was actually just trying to read it interestingly. Instead, I just sounded confused.
I just thought
sitting in with us this week in the third chair is Dr. Ryan Haupt.
Hello, I'm a doctor, and the prognosis is comics.
Cut. Start over.
Let's rethink all of this. All of these decisions we've made.
We'll be back after a brief HR discussion. We are a fanboy. And every week, one of us picks the book that they like the best from their stack of comics. We call that the pick of the week. We try to avoid saying things like what you just heard. And I'd like to apologize on behalf of management. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. We talk about the patron pick. And we answer some listener mail if we have time. The world, you know. So this is your respite. This is our respite. Hope it's a good time. Hope it's a distraction. The fires will still be burning when it's over. Here's your spoiler warning. There will be spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, Ryan has the pick. And... he should know he's on thin ice already.
Yeah.
Geez. Hey, I remembered to use all the legacy numbering this time in the script.
Did you?
Yeah, pretty sure.
In the script, not in the email you sent.
Well, in the email, yeah. But who sees the emails? You guys knew.
Connor.
Here's the issue I have with the legacy numbering. And we're not going to get into it. We don't have time.
All right. Let's go.
She-Hulk 166 is the pick of the week. Written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Roger Antonio, colors by Rico Renzi, and letters by Joe Carmagna. And I really enjoyed Rainbow's Runaways run, and I feel like she's doing similarly great work in this series. The cartooning by Roger is fantastic. It's featuring a bunch of characters that I don't know that well, but I feel like I'm getting a good sense of them from the way that this is being written and depicted. And in this issue, She-Hulk is still trying to get her lawyering career back on track while also dealing with the fact that Jack of Hearts has seemingly returned from the dead and is crashing in her apartment, still wearing his ridiculous Jack of Hearts costume. And Jen is just trying to sort of get everything in order. And it feels like a lot has happened in three issues that are pretty packed with stuff. But it's just been, I don't know, it's a really fun ride. I'm really enjoying both the writing and the art. And there's pizza discussion, so I figured that was a good thing to include for iFanboy.
Yeah, that's something we'll talk about that in a second.
I did notice it. At first, I saw the slice of pizza, and I thought, that pizza doesn't look right. And then she commented, yes, it's thick crust pizza, and I was like, I'll allow it. As long as you've mentioned, yeah, her taste is one thing or another, but they did...
No, so, first of all, it's a Sicilian style, so no one in New York calls it thick crust pizza. It's called Sicilian style. But she comes back around later and calls it Sicilian, so I'll allow that brief.
Is there a difference between Sicilian and a grandma pie?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Grandma pies are thin crust. This is a thick square pizza. So I don't have a problem with the way they hold the slices. Jack of Hearts is really tempting fate holding it up in the bottom like that, but that's all right.
He's not in a good place, though. I mean, he's been, like, you can forgive him.
Has he ever been in a good place?
Well, I want to get to Jack of Hearts in a moment.
Yeah.
But I will say this. So two things happened. One, also, I spent a lot of time thinking about pizza while reading this, because they did some of the things really right here. So any right-thinking American, when they grab a Sicilian slice, they always go for the corner piece first.
Obviously.
And so I looked at the overhead shot of the box, and they both grabbed corner slices. I was like, perfect, great, you got it. Except that when you look at the actual slices they're holding, those are not corner pieces. Those are side pieces. So there's a disconnect from the overhead drawing and the slice drawing.
Perhaps they'd already...
This is the level of analysis that you can expect.
Maybe they ate... Maybe they ate the crust side.
I mean, it's possible they gnawed the sides off like a mouse, but I'm just saying I was impressed that the overhead shot was accurate to what people do when Sicilian pizzas arrive, is they grab the corners first because of the nice thick crust, but then the shots themselves were wrong. But honestly, of all the pizza we've seen in comics lately, this is probably the most accurate we've seen pizza.
That was kind of what I thought. I thought they did a pretty decent job here.
At first, I also thought too much cheese, but then later on she says it was extra cheese, so that's fine.
Right, yeah. I don't think that the overhead shot of the cheese and sauce, the coloring could have been better on that, I think. Mm-hmm. It was too, like, the cheese looked like it was congealed.
There's
it
no
like
leopard you took spotting it on the cheese.
It was like if you take a pizza and then put it in the fridge and then take it out of it and all the cheese is in a perfect, that didn't look right.
It's good stuff.
But what I'm saying is they're like the little brown specks that you get. Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Some people don't. You'd think that a group of people making comics would be, I mean, all historically, that, stereotypically, would be some of the greatest pizza experts on earth. I think the comics crowd is a healthier one than maybe is historically. But, you know, through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, it was a pizza crowd.
It's still up. I mean,
they weren't healthy.
It's still a pizza crowd.
I mean, yeah. But I don't know. They're all, you know, the artists are now international.
Right.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I think the scene that sealed this book as pick of the week was Ben Grimm complaining about leash laws when it comes to Lockjaw. I was like, that's fantastic.
So, pizza aside, it's funny because, I don't know if we talked about this last time we talked, because I think issue one is also pick of the week, the first issue of this miniseries.
I believe so.
Jack of Hearts is a character who is in my blind spot. Even though I was always a big Avengers fan growing up, I don't know much about him, don't know his powers, don't know his origin. So I'm actually learning a lot about him along with the She-Hulk here. But I had no idea he was like the Marvel heartthrob, apparently, because all the ladies here are all excited that she's back and that he was so hot back when he was an Avenger, and didn't realize that was a thing.
Was that like in the 80s or disco era?
Well, because he died and disassembled.
Yep.
You know, with Bendis killed him off.
I think Disassembled is the only book I've ever read him in.
I've certainly seen him in other Avengers comics, but like as one of the Avengers in the background of all the other Avengers.
Right. I've seen him on covers of books that I didn't read.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting is this book is clearly behind Fantastic Four, because over in Fantastic Four,
yes,
they are a full-fledged couple.
Oh, okay. They do get together?
Yeah.
Because they kind of dance around it in this issue, but the cover of the issue by Jen Bardell is very like kind of romance comic.
Oh, I mean, this is a romance comic, so I mean, we know where this is going. I mean, this is a rom-com setup, including the best friend Patsy Walker, who's clearly having a renaissance, where she gets to give the best friend advice on the phone about the hot amnesiac guy who showed up at her friend's house. I mean, this is
I really like that scene. I thought that was cute.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying this is a rom-com setup if there's ever been one. I have no problem with rom-com. I like rom-coms, so it's not a problem for me.
I don't quite by him yet. I just don't know where he's coming from, and like I don't quite understand. It's a cartoon, so it's difficult to say. I'm not sure I understand why he's supposed to be attractive, because he's completely lost and confused. And I mean, if I'm looking at him at an objective level, he looks dumb.
Yeah,
he has a dumb costume. He's got a dumb name. He's got a dumb thing on his face. I don't get it.
And also, like, he's weirdly resistant to what's obvious in a way that I find a little frustrating, of just like, something is up with your powers. You didn't used to need to eat or sleep or drink. Now you do, but you seem surprised by it every time it comes up, even though, like a normal human, every couple of hours, you are either tired or hungry or thirsty.
Have have you met a lot of men?
Yeah.
Because that to me does not seem unusual.
So you're saying this is like, this is the beginning of what will eventually become an amazing Am I the Asshole thread on Reddit.
How many people do you know that go, oh, this thing's been hurting me for 6 years and I haven't gotten checked out?
Oh, I actually meant to say I have a new thing for what hurts on the spreadsheet. I got some tendonitis in the right elbow. It's driving me crazy.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts.
This book is fun and the Roger Tony art's great.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. Like you wouldn't go get it checked out.
That's yeah.
I love the cartooning on this book. I love the emotiveness he gives Jen, and I really loved the back and forth between her and Patsy. The way Patsy is drawn in the first panel that she's in with her head tilted up slightly makes it look a little bit like she has vampire fangs with the way the teeth curve. But other than that, I thought it was pretty excellent.
This was the artist from Deceased, one of the Deceased series. Is that right?
No. I don't think so.
All right. I don't remember where he's from. Or she. I don't really know what Roger seems like.
Josh, are you still enjoying the book overall?
I am enjoying it. I can't say I loved this issue because I'm still sort of confused. I don't feel like I have a handle on Jack of Hearts. I feel like I'm at a party and everybody knows who he is and I don't. And I don't think they're doing a bad job with it. It's just I don't understand the character. I don't know who he's coming from. I don't really understand what his personality is supposed to be. Like, I know he's out of it now, but I just, like, I think it's all well done. I really like Jen in this book. I love the cartooning and the coloring. But I don't know, the relationship isn't quite clear to me yet. And it's also,
I think we're entering the age of the Marvel himbo, like it's you know, him and Hawkeye and all the other, like, which is a lot of Marvel comics right now are just being written where like the dude is just the dumbest piece of work imaginable and the woman is like super capable and helping him out, and it just seems to be in the zeitgeist right now.
But I get those other ones, like you read the other books and you're like, I understand why. Yes, there's that, but you kind of like, I understand why they're attracted to Clint Barton or certainly Bucky.
I mean, yeah, who isn't?
I just said it like it was real. I was like,
I don't know, man. Bucky's facial, we'll talk about it later, but Bucky's facial hair needs
I understand what you're saying, Josh. This guy who we don't know much about has showed up and now all the ladies are on Twitter about it and they're just like, what's happening?
I feel like I need more context for what's happening.
The guy with the face tattoo?
Like he's just like a brunette dude. Like he's not.
Well, yeah, and the fact like his design is terrible. I mean, even if it...
No, it's awful. It's so... Yeah. It's hideous.
And that's all I have. I was like, well, that's all I know about him is that he looks really dumb. And maybe in the 70s or the 80s, like, it didn't look as dumb, but it looks really dumb now. And so I don't get it. It'd be like... To me, like, it'd feel like if a guy showed up, you know, in, like, full Michael Jackson red leather outfit. And everyone's like, oh, my God, he's back. And I was like,
Well, if the guy was really handsome. I think we're getting into spiraling on this because they say he's handsome. He's a drawing, so who knows? But like,
sure.
I think it's just. I think it's more of the idea that they're banking on a lot of history here that we just don't have.
That's it.
And so that's, you know, and that's not a huge problem for me. I'll say, okay, so clearly this was a guy who back then was very. And I'll say back then I was reading comics back then. I was reading Avengers books back then. I just don't remember Jack of Hearts. Stories at all, so I just know context for him. Josh, Raj Antonio drew the Injustice year one.
There you go. Series. That was close. Yeah. Tom Taylor. I just don't like. I don't see it. I feel like they're having us take that as given that he's attractive is not even the word. I just don't understand. Like I know her personality. Her personality is really interesting in the book, and I find myself much more interested in the parts of. Her trying to be a lawyer again and be like, oh, I got to call these people and like network. And
there was a moment in the last issue where there's an ambulance heading to the hospital and she lifts it up over traffic and carries it to the intersection where it can drive away.
Yeah.
And she puts her business card in the back window and like a little nod to being like an ambulance chasing lawyer. And I was like, that was fucking great. That was such a nice little moment.
I'm just more interested in like her getting her life back together and like, oh no, I've got to worry about billable hours, you know, but this should be part of it. This is the part that like resonates with me the least. And this is the issue that spent the most time with it. That's all.
I don't mind it. I kind of like it. I just have, there's a lot of mental leaping I have to do because I just don't know about the guy too much. Yeah. And they're not really doing a ton to lay the groundwork for it. You just have to, they're assuming you know who he is. And
it's a good book. I mean, like, I don't want it to sound like I don't think it's an average book. I think it's a good book. We're just as we're sort of analyzing it, that's where I'm at.
Josh, did you catch up on Batman Killing Time since you didn't read the first one last time?
Yes, I did. And I very much enjoyed the first issue, and I didn't enjoy the second issue as much.
Interesting, because I feel like they're very similar. Like, what's distinct about issue two from issue one that you didn't dig?
I feel like I still don't know what the stakes are.
Mm.
It was a lot of time jumping. It was a lot of Alan Moore Watchmen
very Alan
type
Moore
pacing.
Yeah. Pacing.
And I'm not entirely clear on what we're chasing. There's something to do with Greek gods. It's in the case like Pulp Fiction, you know. I didn't enjoy it as much. I think the first one, I think the novelty of like, oh, this is Tom King doing a different kind of thing. Maybe I just didn't feel like we advanced very much. But also, there's 1,000 Batman stories right now, and I have a hard time keeping track.
I thought this was terrific. I still love the...
Yeah.
Dave Marquez is obviously great, and he does those big action pieces as well as anyone, but his character stuff is awesome. I'm just looking at the page of Penguin in Traction Bed. I mean, this the stuff he's doing is really terrific. And this is not a book that is all 9-panel grids. There are some, even though it's very... It's not even Watchmen... It's not Watchmen influence at all. It's just that the narration is similar to that narration in terms of everything is a time or a date. And I find it really compelling because, like I said last time, hardly any books use third-person narration. And so it really does stand out.
But I think the Watchmen-ness of it is the way that the narration sets up the time and the place.
Yes.
It sort of gives it the same rhythm as... Mm-hmm.
It's the Dr. Manhattan episode.
Yeah.
The one, you know, like he goes into the vault and then we go back to his dad with the watch gears. And
it's the one that's been memed with the new Batman. You know, it's 1989 and watching a Batman movie, the first Batman movie. It's 2005. I'm watching the first Batman movie. It's 2022. I'm watching the first Batman. You know, it's that pacing. That structure.
Yeah, I find that really compelling and really it sort of makes it seem breathless. Though you're constantly moving around and I like that a lot. I wouldn't want every comic to be that, but this is only one. So it really works. I don't know why we are flashing back to the story from mythology. I don't know how it ties in yet. This is
right.
Tom King, so I'm sure it will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other than that, we're just following, you know, like we talked about last time, an early adventure in Batman's life in which Catwoman and Riddler have teamed up to steal something, and it's a much more brutal, villainous Catwoman than we're used to seeing in the modern books.
I also couldn't figure out, like, why when she was in Arkham was she so immediately broken?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
She's used to prowling on the rooftops, being free. Got her in a... It's funny because I was like, wow, they actually put straitjackets on them. It makes sense. It's an asylum. It's, you know, the padded room. They're crazy people, but I did notice it.
Now, Connor, you're a cocktail guy. You ever do a fish garnish?
I never garnish with a fish.
I might try it now that I've seen it. I've got like some dried anchovies that I use for like stock.
They did kill the bartender, and I think that's justified. I mean, I think, you know, obviously this is a book that's meant to capitalize on the film. All the main characters are from the film, you know, Penguin and Joker and Riddler and Catwoman, Batman. But, and Bruce and Jim Gordon are a little bit more chummy here. So, I mean, I get it why it exists, but I'm like the idea that Tom King gets to tell a different kind of Batman story than he has before.
Yeah.
And the one that feels much more like the story he said he was going to tell with the full Batman book, which was just sort of a Batman adventure.
I mean, I think he's probably a hell of a lot better at it now than he was then. Like back then, I talked to him before that came out on our show, and like he was like, yeah, it's a big change. Like, it's a lot. And I think, you know, now he's got those kind of powers under them. I think the best scene in this, the best page was Batman goes to Vera, Killer Croc's girlfriend's apartment, and she's got him dead to rights. She's like, what are you gonna do, hang me out the window? He just stares at her, and at the end she calls him, you know, Batman, and he's like, it's pronounced Batman, and that's all he's got. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. If you take away his violence in the face of somebody there, he's kind of powerless, at least at whatever this point is in his career is.
Well, at least with someone who knows, you know, someone who's been through it.
Like, right. I liked she was a Gotham girl. She was like, no, like, I'm from Gotham. Like, your shtick doesn't, you know, it's that classic New Yorker thing where it's just like, yeah, I've seen it all.
I was born in fucking Charlestown. You think you're going to scare me with your fucking hat?
I enjoyed this book. It's not great, but I really do like it. I think the first issue, you're right, was much better than the first one, but I thought it was good. So, Spider-Punk, number one. Cody Ziegler and Justin Mason is the creative team.
The Calamitous Cody Ziegler and the Jammin Justin Mason, if you go by the credit.
I don't know. This was heavily discussed in the iFanboy Slack when we saw it. I don't know what this book is, where it came from, the only Spider-Verse I know is the movie. I don't know if that's a comic thing. The cover was awesome.
Yes.
And I really liked Justin Mason's art. I liked the style. I thought it really worked for the aesthetic of the story. I got about 5 pages in and I was like, this is not for me. And I just kept, at that point, I decided to see if I could follow the story. It was just the art.
I think you were right. I think the art and the coloring, the production of it was, and the designs, all that was sort of the strongest part of it.
Jim Charlapetis.
Yeah, that's a name. Charlampetis.
Charlampetis.
You know, it's called Spider Punk. I listen to punk rock. I'm not going to say I'm going to call myself a punk. I think that's a weird thing. But, you know, like all of the punk iconography in it and the sort of copped attitudes to me was a little like on the nose. You know, his little head spikes, his jean jacket, his Chucky's. And then so I read it. Like, when I saw the cover, I was like, ugh.
I mean, the cover is terrific drawings.
It's a terrific drawing, but I think it's like it's kind of lame iconography. I mean, if you you know anything about the punk scene or history, or like you read all that stuff, like it's goofy. Like if you're trying to get across an aesthetic to folks looking at it, then it's great for that. It's a great drawing. But as I read this, I read the story. I'm like, all right, I'll give it a chance. And I was like, this looks beautiful, but like, I don't know what it was for. It didn't stand out at all.
I know Foundation. Like, what is this?
Right.
Where is this taking place? I mean, it's Earth. It's different Earth. It's Earth
138.
138. So okay, fine. It's not a different. It's a multiverse story. Okay, I guess that's the Foundation. But I don't know anything about that, so I don't have any context or...
Right, it's unclear as, like, is the whole world punks? Like, is this punk Earth? Like, in which case, punk is therefore not counterculture, therefore it's not cool, right?
I don't know. You understood it more than me, if that's what you got out of it.
I was definitely confused. You know, it seemed like a theme this week in comic was punch a Nazi, which is, I can get behind that at the very least. Spider-Man or Spider-Punk uses his guitar as a weapon. Does the guitar have the proportional strength of a spider? Because otherwise it seems like you're just wrecking a perfectly good guitar.
Can I tell you, by the way, a Gibson SG is not known for its strength around the headstock neck area.
It just didn't seem like a good idea to hit Craven with a guitar when you have the proportional strength of a spider in your arms already.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that it's goofy. And it wasn't particularly funny. It didn't bring a lot. It felt to me like we're going to put this punk aesthetic on top of things and that'll do the work for us.
Right. And it felt especially like kind of plastered on with characters like Ironheart, where I'm just like, okay, so she still has to be smart enough and tech savvy enough to build like a suit of armor that's Iron Man level, but we're going to like stencil some stars and graffiti on it to make it look punk. And so, it was just like, I was like, well, that's dumb.
It reminds me of, Connor and I were talking about this with, The Dark Ages, the Tom Taylor book, in that it's an Elseworlds story, but what he's done is there's two kinds of Elseworlds stories you can do where you just take the characters and you put a skin over them, and you put them in a different kind of world, but they're still pretty much the same, or you do one where it's surprising and different. And this is the former. It's, you know, like these are the characters, you know, they have a different look and they sound a little different when they talk, but they're basically the same. You know, and so in that way, like it, I don't know, it just didn't do much. It was all aesthetic, which, you know, if from a punk standpoint, kind of posery.
Yeah. And I mean, the plot and like we haven't really talked about the plot, but the plot is basically like it opens with Spider-Punk and Captain Anarchy, who's the Captain America of this universe, beating up Kraven and some of his henchmen. And then they just let Kraven and his henchmen leave. And then they go back to their base. And they hang out for a few minutes, and then Kraven and his gang comes back, and they fight them again. I was like, wait, why did you let him leave then? Like, just, plot-wise, it just felt like, sort of like Fury Road, you know, Matt, where it's just like, well, we're going to drive to this place, and we're going to drive back. And I just didn't quite...
Yeah, but that was awesome.
It was awesome, but it was punk as hell.
This wasn't.
I don't know.
This to me feels like, wouldn't it be cool if Spider-Man looks like this, and then he hit people with a guitar? Yeah! End of story meeting.
It would be cool. The end. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Justin Mason is terrific, though. I did like the art. I thought
I thought this is gorgeous. This is really
dynamic and fun and interesting.
Storytelling was good.
Yeah. What I took out of this book.
Totally. I don't know if you guys would have. There are a bunch of like cheeky punk lyric references throughout the whole thing.
Didn't catch one.
And then when Taskmaster shows up at the end, he's got his hair's like Doyle from the Misfits, and he says "Scream with me." So those are like all punk lyrics. There's a few more in there that I don't really remember because they weren't particularly memorable. But you know, all that stuff was in there. But it's like, you know, top level Gabba Gabba Hey Hey sort of stuff. And I'm not that cool. That's not the point. But it, like, if I get them all, you know, it's fine. So it's I don't know who it's for.
Black Widow 55 is the final issue of this run, Kelly Thompson, and lots of artists. I forgot this book. Has it been delayed? I forgot this book existed. I forget. I took a long time to remember what was happening.
So this was the 15th issue of this run.
Yeah.
And I think it's been coming out pretty regularly. I think it's been monthly.
It's been more than a month. It's got to be.
I don't know. I mean, it's easy enough to find out. But
is it?
I really enjoyed this all the way through. I think the Elena Casagrande art has been just a complete revelation. And she did another one of the scenes in this one where, you know, during the action scene, you're just seeing all different time and parts of it at once when she's fighting a Living Blade. I think Living Blade is a real formidable villain in this mm-hmm. sense, and that doesn't happen a lot. Also, it's one I haven't seen way too many times. That said, you know, at the end, I'm not really sure what problem we solved. I don't know if I kind of lost track of it. I liked the little team they put together, but I kind of didn't know who everybody was on it. I liked that Clint and Bucky showed up, you know, and there's a relationship. And I think that the whole thing starts off with Natasha has a family that is real, but that she was, you know, mind controlled into having, and then they had to protect them, they had to get away from her, and she just has to forget about them, but she didn't forget about them, so it's always there in the background. And then there's a bit at the end where, you know, she's like, all right, I don't have my son or my husband, but I know that they're safe, and this group of people was pretty good. And I was like, that is not a thing a parent would say.
Yeah, that's what, if you recall way back in the very beginning of this run, I said this was a huge mistake.
Yes.
Don't you can't give her a family like this. It'll change the character and haunt it forever. And I think that's I agree with you, Josh. Like, it's just, it doesn't. I knew that would happen as soon as it was. I was like, well, this is, you can't just wipe away that family.
No, especially if she's aware of it. You should wipe her mind so that she doesn't know and then forget about it until you want to bring it back. But to have her know that she has a son who's like a little kid and her whole thing is to be a superhero who protects people. No way hanging out with this group of misfits is going to cover that at all.
Yeah,
she would be the saddest person at that table. And she's a Russian, so she would be drunk and angry.
I just knew that was a mistake, and it still continues to be a mistake. In this particular issue, there were too many sort of platinum blonde villains. So like at the end when they're fighting on the rooftop, the woman who was like escaping in the helicopter, I thought it was one of the people from the early in the issue. Because they have the same short platinum blonde hair, and then they show up and grab her by the throat. I was like, "Wait, now there's three of them?" Just only because, again, I was like, "I don't know when this last issue came out, but that was a problem." I agree, Ryan. Bucky's got dumb facial hair, but I can't. You know, what are you gonna do?
Shave.
He's gonna look different when he comes back in the next. Nobody ever draws him the same, so it doesn't matter.
But overall, this was a fun book.
Yeah. I mean, totally. This was delayed pretty heavily by the pandemic because the movie was delayed and then they brought this out earlier. But
in reading this issue, I went and I looked up what are Spider-Girl's actual powers, and there is not a clear answer. There's something, apparently at one point she was able to grow spider armor, like an exoskeleton. I'm very confused by Anya Corazon's abilities.
She is whatever the story needs her to be.
Yep.
I kind of love that.
Like, I don't, like, in everything I read about her, it's unclear if she even has web shooters or if she's able to create webs. But, like, in this book, she's basically just fighting as Spider-Man. And I don't quite understand how. And that's fine. It didn't bother me. It just, I you know.
Well, for a long time, those were her powers. It was just, again, Spider-Man's powers. So it just depends on which version of the character they want to use. I will say this, finally. This is not a knock on the book, because I did like the book. I'm just saying this to all writers of comic books and comic book related TV shows out there. It's okay to have a character just be by themselves. They don't have to have a team of quirky misfits around them. That's literally every single.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
I like this group. I like Natasha. It makes sense that Natasha and Clint and Bucky would always, and she's got a sister. She's like, she's got like a built-in team, but like every story now, it's like, it's, you can't just have the hero alone. It's the hero plus the tech guy and the quirky science girl. And like, it's like everyone, every team has that.
And the last issue of Spider-Woman was last week and it was the same. And I was like, I feel like I'm being a jerk by getting them mixed up, but also, you know, they were very similar tones, and some of the characters, the villains actually looked kind of similar, so I was getting them mixed up. I feel like if you had read this, you know, either like, you know, within 2 week intervals, or you read the two trades or whatever it would be, some of the beats at the end would be more satisfying. So when they open the room and they find out that they're draining the blood out of Apogee, and I was like, that's vaguely familiar, but I don't know what this means because it's been too long. But you know, I had that exact same thought about the group. It's like, oh, this is, they're, you're always doing a show, so you can have an ensemble cast.
It's always a team book now. Every book's a team.
Also, I feel like as good as Bucky is, Winter Soldier and all.
Whoa! Be careful.
He does like a thing where he like puts his arm behind his back and fires off a shot at a helicopter rotor. Yeah. It seemed unrealistic.
Whoa.
That's the only unrealistic thing I saw in this book.
That's the most unrealistic thing in the book.
Not her arm being reattached through magic.
Nope.
The one guy who did a thing that Buffalo Bill would do in Wild West shows 150 years ago in real life.
Yep.
You couldn't get behind that.
I'm sticking with it. I stand by my take.
All right.
Fair enough. I want to take a second to thank the folks who help support the show and let you know, if you haven't, and why not, how you could do that. But first of all, let's start off with patreon.com/ifanboy. That is the place where folks who want to directly support the show, they say, we like this show, we like what you're doing, and it's important to me that it continues. How can I help out? Well, you could go there. It unlocks shows that everybody gets to listen to. Your talks explodes, media explodes, books explodes, other splode type things, your hangouts. You're part of a great community on Discord or on the Facebook group, and you know, you're adding, the more people do it, the more stuff that we have to do. I mean, the more shows you get to listen to. The next stretch goal would be to add a comic book television show coverage of some kind that we'll worry about when we get closer to that.
For 1 second, I thought you were saying we were going to start making a TV show, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
I mean, we tried that.
I don't have time.
No, definitely not. The patronage would have to be enormously increased.
Yeah.
You can go to ifanboythreadless.com. If I check down right now, I'm wearing a crew neck, so it wasn't as easy as my normal zippy. Yeah, Clint is dead is the shirt I am wearing as we speak. It speaks to the nature of Clint Barton being dead in many, many ways. You can find 12 designs that you can put on t-shirts and other stuff. Lots of other stuff. Our newest design is the Gosh shirt. I need to get it, but I also have a lot of shirts. I think I could cull the shirts, then get it.
I have a purple one.
My wife has been asking me to do a shirt cull for, I want to say, a year now, at least. I won't do it.
Well, you know, one thing that helps is gaining a lot of weight.
Mm.
You can just, yeah. Not a lot, well, but I typically live between medium and large, and that can go either way. So at ifanboy.com/support, you will find direct links for PayPal if you don't want to deal with any of that stuff, but you'd still like to donate something in there if you'd like to. None of this is compulsory. We appreciate everybody who does, but you can listen either way, and we will not love you any less. It's just that we will love them more. You can work that math out. ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you'll find links to buy all the books on Booksplode. You'll always find a link for the music on the show. On the show page, you will find a link to buy the book itself, the pick of the week. And then finally, there's bookshop.org. For all the places where we can on the website, we partner with bookshop.org to help you buy books that we talk about from local bookstores. And you will find those where we can stick them on the website. And that is all. Let's move back to the program, talking about the comics.
Moon Knight is another book, Moon Knight 10.
Josh, you're a Moon Knight fan, right? I mean, you're like the resident Moon Knight guy here on the show.
Yeah. When Jim Viscardi isn't here, it's my bag.
This is another book that the hero has a quirky team around him. Again, not always bad, but everyone has it. So when it becomes ubiquitous, it becomes a problem. But he has like a whole like Tigra and his vampire office manager and that dude. And so again, anyway, this book was terrific.
Yes.
This was another great issue. I love this series. This issue particularly was terrific. Moon Knight is a bastard, and I think that's part of his character. and he does something really horrible here in this comic, although not necessarily unjustified. And so I always like it when the main character is like, "You've hurt my friends and family. I'm going to come and destroy you." And that's sort of the cliffhanger here.
It was, I mean, it was great. Like, if you actually look at the cartooning that was done, you know, the therapist that he's talking to, like, starts to sweat pretty early in the issue. And it, like, gets worse and worse until the reveal that, like, they're not who they say they are. And Moon Knight is going to do very bad things to them. And I thought that was so well handled. The slow burn of it, the reveal of it. It was just incredibly good comicking.
Jed McKay is terrific, and he's been really strong on this book. Moon Knight's, you know, we've been talking about it. It gets like 20 issues, and it reboots itself with a new creative team. But this one has been particularly strong, and the last couple have been strong. It's been a good run for Moon Knight in general last couple years.
I did think, though, that when the therapist, the whole time I was like, a therapist wouldn't say that. When then it's revealed that, I was like, oh, it's Clayface to Batman. I see. Like, that, they have to be aware they're doing that, right? That has to be a self-aware thing. As long as it is, I'm fine with it.
No, there was a point in the beginning I was like, well, she's really revealing information about her other patients. It's like, it's not a good thing.
And she's pretty aggressive.
A lot of books, not a lot of books, so several books I'm reading ended this week as they were meant to. This is the final issue of The Thing.
Oh, did you start reading this? Because last time I talked about this,
I've been reading it the whole time.
Oh, really?
You're talking about Josh wasn't reading it.
Okay, I feel like you and I talked about it, but I guess I misremembered that you weren't up on it. Yeah.
No, I've read all of your issue.
Cool.
Walter Mosley, Tom Riley. Tom Riley is just terrific. And they're doing, another miniseries. I don't know if it's the same team, but Clobberin' Time, number one, is coming out in June with Thing and Hulk. But I thought this issue was it was my least favorite of all the issues. I'll just say that.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think the writing was a little, I don't say simplistic, but
I was just really tickled that when we last talked about this book, correctly surmised that the kid was an Uatu watcher person.
Yeah.
That was revealed in the previous issue, but I just wanted to touch base on that. And
the girlfriend is deaf and the kid's an Uatu. I did like that. There was a couple of moments here I really did like, and the Thing has this helmet on and lets him see things, and he sees a bunch of the heroes and what they're doing. I just love the issue of the idea of Peter sitting on a rooftop with a sandwich with his mask up. It's just so like, it's just such a Peter Parker thing. He's just having a sandwich on a roof. I like that so much. And then the really sweet moment was that Alicia gets brought down to hell, and in hell she has her sight.
Right.
And so she sees the Thing for the first time.
And then when they all come back to Earth, she loses it again, but they have this really sweet moment of like, she's not going to forget.
Right, but she says, it's you, you're so beautiful. I thought that was just a really sweet moment.
It was great.
I liked this miniseries quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
I'm enjoying his series, The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. Walter Mosley. It's a program on the television. But
Batman Beyond Neo Year number one by Colin Kelly, Jackson Lansing, and Max Dunbar doing the art. And I really wanted to like this. I'm a big Batman Beyond fan. This was okay. It introduces a new villain who's kind of got a cool, like, malleable lightsaber shtick, and I thought the art was really well done. Like, it evokes the show without being, you know, tracings of what the animated cells look like. It's different enough, but it's still recognizably Terry McGinnis. I don't think this was as strong as Batman Beyond the White Knight by Sean Murphy the other week. So I enjoyed this. I don't know if I'm gonna stick with it, but I did want to give it a try because I like the character and the premise enough.
Devil's Reign 6 is the final issue of this miniseries. I didn't want to let it pass by without noting a few things. Number one, it was just a Marco Cecchetto tour de force. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of big group fighting in this as the sort of battle for New York came to a head. And I thought there was just some incredible panels and pages in here from him. But also, Wilson Fisk, no longer the mayor.
Thank God.
Luke Cage, now the mayor.
What?
Well, he's running. He hasn't won.
No, he was appointed mayor, it says at the end.
Oh. No shit.
Yeah, it says, I think it was in the fucking essay. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it says, luckily the right man is on the job, the newly deputized Mayor Luke Cage.
That's not how that works at all.
Yeah, don't tell us the story beats in the essay.
I don't even mean that, like, just administrative-wise, that's not
how that works. I think the deputy mayor becomes mayor at that point.
He's just a candidate. He doesn't want anything.
And then Wilson Fisk, for a second, they were going to make him president. And I was like, oh, God, he already looks a little bit like Lex Luthor. Now we're doing that. But then that, I like the swerve on that.
Yep.
And it seems like Wilson is going off to semi-retirement with Typhoid Mary on a boat.
He literally sailed off into the sunset.
Yeah, while his son becomes a new kingpin. I thought this was a strong final issue. I've enjoyed this miniseries. It seems like it was a capper to Chip's Daredevil run. I don't know if that's true or not, but felt
like
it.
Looks like we're getting a new sort of Daredevil epoch that's going to start now, where Matt and Elektra are going to go take down the Hand, and that'll be like their thing. And I'm fine with that. Switch
I'm
it
looking
up.
Forward to it.
Been
yeah.
in the city for a long time, and I do like that. It actually felt like the ending of a story, which you don't get very much. Usually at the end of a run or something like this, you know, it's still just prelude to whatever comes next. And this seals up the story with the super rich people. Mm-hmm. You know, it gave Wilson Fisk an ending of a sort. It just felt like it had a little finality that you don't always get in here. So I appreciate that.
And there's just a lot. I thought there was a lot going on. She tried out a lot of characters to draw.
Yes.
A lot of big action sequences. I thought it was a beautiful book. I've enjoyed this whole miniseries.
Yeah, pretty good.
I thought it's been good. So there you go. Those are the comics we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron of the show gets to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week it was a alleyway knife fight between The Rocketeer, The Great Race, number one, and Spider-Punk, number one. And the winner was The Rocketeer, The Great Race, number one, by art and story by Stephen Mooney. Colors by Lynn O'Grady and letters by Sean Lee. This is from IDW, and this is a new Rocketeer miniseries to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the character.
That's crazy.
The last Rocketeer miniseries I read was the Wade Somni one, I believe, which was terrific. Mm-hmm. Cargo of Doom or something like that. Anyway, I love the Rocketeer. He's just one of those characters that's been around my entire life, almost, and is sort of on the edge of superhero and pulpy.
One of the best designs of a character.
Yes, Dave Stevens' creation, who's no longer with us, star of a great film. And I've always just liked The Rocketeer. I'm always happy to check out a new Rocketeer book. And I thought the Stephen Mooney art was terrific. I really liked his style. It was had a little bit of weirdness to it, which I liked. But, you know, he did the Rocketeer action really well. Rocketeer lives in a fun zone. It's the early part of the last century. It's the lead up to the World War II. There's Nazis in Los Angeles.
I keep waiting for you know, what's his face, the Welsh guy who did the pulp thing, to show up. You guys are gonna be mad at me for blanking on the name.
The Welsh guy who did the Pope thing?
The pulp thing. Perry Mason.
Perry Mason.
I keep waiting for Perry Mason to show up.
You mean the actor?
Yeah. He's Welsh.
He is. He is. You've all those words knocked his name out of my head.
So, you know, in this story, it's hard to tell if this is connected to other Rocketeer stories, but it's always somewhat the same. You know, he's giving up being the Rocketeer. His girlfriend doesn't want him to be the Rocketeer. Cliff is, you know, tired of being shot at and, you know, all the danger that comes with it. So he's just going to go back to flying planes because that's safe in the 30s. And, you know, through a lot of things that happen, he's going to be involved in this great race that's going to happen in Europe. This airplane race from not Howard Hughes that is sponsoring him to be the pilot. And obviously it's going to get involved with Nazis and things like that.
I was frustrated by the plotting in this because it's like he hears that there might be Nazis up in them there hills. So he goes to find out and turns out there were Nazis, and he punches them for a bit and then flies away, and they shoot at him, and like he panics, but then he has like a flashback that kind of gives us a history of the character, and then he's like just fine at home, and we never learn like why did his jetpack not explode. And then the whole like the driving force of the plot is he promises to stop being the Rocketeer, then gets offered a job not being the Rocketeer, and then is super conflicted about whether or not to take this job, even though it is within the parameters of what he promised to do. And then when his girlfriend finds out about it, she's stoked and wants him to do it. And so he spent the entire issue fretting about whether or not to take this job when literally no one was upset about him taking this job of flying the race, you know, in the rocket plane.
There definitely was a storytelling issue from when he gets shot.
Yep.
His pack gets shot up by the Nazis. And the very next panel is a double page sort of, you know, history of the Rocketeer. And then the next thing we see is him landing on a bed. And I was like, wait a minute, what happened? Because last thing I saw, his pack was blown up while he was in the air. So there was an issue there,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, he's falling through the sky in the in the double page spread in the foreground, but
right.
How did he get from the sky to the bed?
That was an issue. And then we see that like the jetpack has been shot up and he gives it to his buddy. And I also, whenever I read a Rocketeer comic, I can't help but remember that I preferred the rocket pack design from the movie to the one that in the comics. And I know the comics one is the original one, but I think that the redesign for the movie was just better.
Yes.
It's because the one in the movie, it looks more Art Deco than the one in the comic, which looks more like Flash Gordon.
A little trash can,
you know. So I just think the movie one leans into the Art Deco-ness of the series, which makes the series so cool and stylistic. And like we see that the jetpack's been shot up, and then later he's like got the jetpack and it's fine. It looks exactly.
That's because Peeve is a genius.
Yeah, but Peeve didn't invent the jetpack. Like, didn't he just find the jetpack?
Yeah, but he can fix anything.
It was Nazi science.
He can fix anything.
These darn Nazis.
Josh, I assume you did not like this.
I liked it fine. I thought it looked really cool. There's a bit, I don't know how to explain it, but there's a bit in the art where occasionally he'd draw a character, like that one where he falls in the, like after he falls in the bed and the girlfriend is there and she just looks like she's pasted in.
Yeah.
She doesn't look like she's part of it, which is part of like the aesthetic because she's basically doing a pinup girl pose or whatever. There's just a couple of things where like it doesn't seem to gel together. I like the elements of it. The way that they drew whoever the Howard Hughes guy or whatever, guy with the plane, like
Dalton Nikos.
He just looks like he's different than all the things around.
He almost looks like out of focus relative to like just, the way the other characters have a sharp line about them.
I feel like that's on purpose, but I don't understand what it's trying to communicate. I think the part that you're talking to earlier, that you know where the story, the action scene was going on and then it was over, I was like, what the hell just happened? And then after that I kind of got my bearings, but I then after that I felt unsteady, so I was like, well, you know, yeah. Once we get to the part where he offers him the new job and he go, you know, this sort of demanded that there's a recap, but you kind of have to know what the Rocketeer is, which isn't too hard to figure out, and I think they did a good enough job with that, but I had to orient myself for a little bit. I think the writing did its job, but I think that it leaned on the fact that, like, well, we can be vague about some of this because it goes with the aesthetic, which is fine if you love being in the aesthetic, but I kind of was, you know, I was like, I want a little more story, I think, because it's all pretty basic. It's sort of what I'm saying about the Spider-Man thing, but...
How do the pants work?
Jodhpurs?
Like, what causes them to have the little... Whoop? Off to the side.
The shape of the fabric, and then they sew it so that it has that curve.
But like, why? Is there a reason?
Yes, you can wear high boots.
But couldn't you? I mean, I feel like I could wear high boots with the jeans I'm wearing now.
Pants are always about lines and the shape that they're giving you. At that time, they wanted it to look that way, and they thought for some reason that when you ride a horse, the top part of your pants should be billowy. I don't know.
But he's a pilot. He's not on a horse at any point in this story.
I know, but that's where those come from. I feel like
planes are the horses of the sky.
Yeah, like that's like early on. They were like, "Well, what's the closest kind of outfit we have for this plane thing?"
I was just thinking we should bring back jodhpurs. Actually, looking at that,
no, I think we should bring back high boots.
Further, how come directors wore them?
I'm on record as before I die, I want a pair of boots that I have to fold the top down like Captain America does. That's important.
Oh, sure, pirate boots.
Yeah,
no, that's. I mean, who, what right thinking man isn't?
But it's a good question, Josh. What was the aesthetic that the film director was going for?
Cameras are the horses of the cinema.
The ground. Yeah.
I guess. Like they're masked, like they're riding.
Or they just, everything. They saw Cliff Secord and they were like, those are cool pants. Where are those?
I mean, that's not an unusual thing for Hollywood.
He was in Hollywood. He's in LA. He's flying around. People would have seen him. Directors would have, you know, they would have been paying attention.
Except he's not real, and they did really do that. He came out much later. Yeah. I thought it was fine. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I don't have a particular affection for the character or anything, although I think it is really cool. Like, it's a really cool concept and time. I think I would have liked it more if it was a little more of a straightforward story instead of that sort of, you know, gauzy, you know, Hollywood movie version.
Matthew
Does
Reese.
That make sense what I'm saying? Yeah.
I didn't look it up.
One of the greatest
just
actors
remembered.
Of our time. Yeah. Oh man, you're going to be settled right into middle age. Enjoy that. you know, it was fine, but wasn't my favorite thing.
Yeah. So ratings on The Rocketeer, The Great Race, number one. Ratings out of 5.
I give Matthew Rhys a 5.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to give this book a 3.25. I liked it. It was fun, but not great.
I'm going 3.5. Because I have a lot of affection for the character, and this scratched the itch enough, but there were issues with the issue. I probably will stick with it, but not without some grumbles.
3.
I'm going to stick with it as well, if only to see what's going to happen with the race.
But Josh, you didn't tell us what you rate Matthew Rhys on your ratings.
5.8 on a scale of 5.
He's so
I'm not
good.
Kidding.
He's
I'm so good. We haven't seen any Matthew Rhys in a while. I'm really upset about it. Like, but during the pandemic, Lindsay and I watched all the way through the Americans, and then Perry Mason came out near the end of it, and I was like full on fanboy. And now it's been too long.
They're shooting season 2.
Oh, he's so tortured.
So patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but the $5 or higher a month patrons get a superpower live on the show, like these 3 patrons. Josh, kick it off.
Well, here's the best thing I came up with for Stew Wars. And I'll just say, I'm not proud of this. He's the helicopter.
Okay.
He's a little helicopter backpack that's really loud. It belches smoke. It's not particularly fast, but he can fly around
like
with it.
Like the Inspector Gadget?
Yeah.
Like, how is that a power?
No, it's like...
Because Inspector Gadget had a little helicopter come out of his hat.
It's a gadget.
Okay, well, hold on now. Are we saying it has to be a superpower? Like, you can't, we couldn't, for example, come up with a Hawkeye type thing for this.
Well, the power, Hawkeye's power is he's really, really good at.
No, aiming. But Hawkeye doesn't have power. He's just human who's really good at aiming.
Or Batman.
Batman doesn't have any powers.
So we can't give somebody a thing? We can't give somebody a skill?
I don't think so.
I thought we were giving him a gimmick.
There's a fine line between power and skill.
I think it's a gimmick.
Skill, like skill is something you can train and earn by hard work, whereas a power, it's there. Just is.
All right, you know what, we can hash this out whenever we want, but the problem here is that Stu Wars needs something to do, and I'm saying he has an old-timey backpack that looks like you know, World War II era, but it has a helicopter that comes out of the top, and he straps that thing on and he flies around. He's not sneaking up on anybody. He's not not moving a heck of a lot faster than a bicycle.
Does he have to refuel it? Like, does he have to go to the gas station and like top it off?
Yeah.
How many miles? What's the miles per gallon?
He would never pass a smog test.
I think he's not concerned about that. He would very slowly rise, and you don't have to inspect it. It's not a registered vehicle. They would just be like, what?
You know what? Right. You might be okay, because I'm looking through our old database of powers
Is there any sort of consequence to Josh fucking around?
No, what I'm saying is, I believe we just gave someone a power that was just a bag that they had.
I think you can have a gadget.
I think it's a power. if it grew out of his back and now is a backpack that is a helicopter.
Yeah, I gave out of someone a magical bag. So there you go. You can have that. They can have
he's got the he's the helicopter.
Like the Rocketeer, but okay. That's Lauren.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's things you could save people from the tops of buildings, for example, or
now here's the thing.
You can't get a cat out of a tree, you'll all die.
I think we've all been pronouncing helicopter wrong our entire lives. If you look at the root words of helicopter, it's a helical wing. So it should be helicopter.
Helicopter.
Can I tell you how that affects it? My wife pronounces it more helicopter than helicopter, and I've been telling her how it bothers me for a good
time. I think she's right.
Might be, but she's not going to listen to this, and so we're good.
That's a shame.
So earlier today in the show, we talked about Mexican food, and I had this power already. I could show you the email timestamp where I emailed myself from my phone in bed last night when I thought of it. Joe Christensen, I also gave him a name.
I'm so nervous right now because you might be stealing mine.
I doubt it. He's the salsa king. And as the salsa king, Joe Christensen can not only magically produce any kind of salsa in the world, also a terrific dancer.
Wow. Wow. That's a great power.
Covering the word.
That's fantastic.
Is that a power or a skill?
He's never even practiced. They just can't.
I've never practiced salsa either. I just made the mistake of telling an older woman at a nightclub in Costa Rica that I did not know how to salsa. And then like an hour later, I was still dancing and badly in need of water and help.
Yeah. We all know.
Yeah, I don't have a story like that.
He can produce any kind of salsa from that little place you went to in Mexico once. He's got it for you. Styles, types. He can produce a giant vat of salsa if you got people coming over. A little bowl.
How spicy can he go with it?
He can whatever you want. He's the salsa king.
Is he limit? Does he need ingredients?
Magically appears.
Okay. So that's definitely because
his hand over a bowl, and the salsa appears.
Because if it was like dependent on having fresh tomatoes, then you'd have.
He could theoretically hold his hand over.
You laughed
a ball
at me
as well, and just cover a ball in salsa.
Yeah, I mean, cover in salsa if you want over your head. We have to stop this conversation.
I have a small diversion here that I have to. Yeah, which is related. So there's a place by me that does pretty good tacos and burritos.
There goes the emails.
Yeah, I'm in New Hampshire, so whatever. Now, they have two available types of salsas. They have a mild and a hot.
Uh-huh.
Now, the mild is far too mild.
Right.
The hot...
Far too hot.
...is far too hot.
Are these like a... These like a blended.
I don't know. They make
like a chunky. Give us. I need a texture.
It's certainly got texture and chunks in it, but it's not overly. It's not like big chunks of vegetables. It's been cooked down. And I can stand hot. I'm like I can eat it. It's fine. But it is at the edge of. I'm just trying to have some.
Are you something of a heat seeker?
We've had this conversation before. Where maybe it was on the hangout or the tiki hangout. I don't remember where it was, but there's such things.
It was in the tiki hangout.
Too hot. Yeah. When I'm not enjoying the food anymore and I can't taste anything, it's too hot.
Right. And it's so, and also like I have the kids here and sometimes I want to hang out. Like sometimes I want to like, oh, let's try a really hot thing and it'll be fun. But I just try to eat some chips. You know, if there was some, none of this is the point of what I'm getting at. If there was some medium, like I sometimes I've asked for two, but they're like, you only get one. And so I can mix them or whatever, or I'll add hot sauce to the other one. But it does make it a bit of a challenge. But the problem is I feel shame when I have to say mild.
Yeah.
I do not like saying it because I feel as if I'm being judged. And I was like, it's not that I can't handle that. I want you to know.
But you can't.
I can. You're doing it now.
It sounds like you're not.
It's not.
Because I don't buy into the, narrative that it can be too hot. Food should hurt. It should hurt
it
to
eclipses,
eat.
It eclipses all the flavors.
Yes, exactly. All you're tasting is the burning and not the flavors of anything.
There's a taco place out in the kind of Maryland, D.C. exurb suburb area in Hyattsville called Taqueria La Pasita. And they have the little condiment tray that you sometimes get at like a Thai food place where it's like the little jars in like the metal holder thing. And you get that with your tacos. And they got three things in it. A salsa verde that is garlicky and citrusy and delicious. They have a salsa de chile de árbol that will melt your teeth off your face. And then they have just like literally onions and habaneros stuffed in like a little pickle jar together. And the melt your face off chile de árbol, it's amazing. And you just have to accept that you're going to be hurting both in the moment of eating the food and the next day in the bathroom. But it's worth it because the flavor is delicious and food should be painful. I rest my case.
Yeah, go ahead. So how's the rest of your family feel about that?
We got enough bathrooms in the house. I could sequester.
I'm just saying, you're trying to get your kids to like something. You maybe don't want to burn their faces off.
We have been very careful about not giving the kid overly spicy food. And that is definitely me having to hold back. I made a vindaloo the other day, and he definitely was not getting any of that.
All right, last power.
Kevin O'Buckley. Is that a typo? Is it Kevin Buckley?
I copied it how it was because I don't know if it's Kevin O'Buckley.
Kevin Zero Buckley.
No, Kevin... is it a middle initial? Is it an Irish thing? I don't know,
I feel like there needs to be an apostrophe if it's an Irish thing.
Well, there should be a space if it's a middle initial. The point is we don't know what it is here.
Okay.
I mean, either way, it's Kevin Buckley or Kevin of Buckley.
Or Kevin O'Buckley.
Or Kevin Oswald Buckley.
Kevin
O'Buckley
is the rapper. He can rap anything perfectly. Burritos,
that's a skill.
GIFs,
oh.
Tamales, vinyl, enchiladas, taquitos. Much like Connor, I am craving Mexican food and want a burrito. I want a mission-style burrito so badly, but no one on the East Coast, no one east of the Mississippi, no one outside the Bay Area seems to know how to wrap a burrito properly, and it's a problem. And Kevin is here to solve that problem for the good people of these United States and the world. because he can wrap anything, including mission style burritos, and he can do it anywhere in the world, which is sorely needed.
I could use that guy around at Christmas.
You know, Josh, I was in San Francisco in December, the month in which Christmas occurs, where wrapping happens. And a pandemic thing I've noticed is salsa bars, thing of the past. You can't all these taquerias I used to go to that had salsa bars.
Yeah,
gone. And it's gone, so sad because, you know, that it solves your problem. You used to be able to get whatever mix and blend of salsas you wanted, and now you can't.
Again, normally I can find something I like. I'm saying at this particular location, one too much, one far too little. That's all.
No, but I'm just saying, like, the taquerias that used to have a fantastic salsa bar, where they'd have, like, a pico de gallo, they'd have a salsa verde, they'd have a salsa roja, they'd have, you know, they have all the salsas you need to have a fantastic meal.
And some weird pumpkin pineapple thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Salsa calabaza. It's gone. All gone.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and give $5 or higher and get your power live on the show, like Stu and Joe and Kevin. Thanks for, well, Stu Wars, whatever his proper name is. Thanks for being patrons. We can do a quick
email. Yeah, let's do the second email. One.
The first one might. The second one. The first one or the second one? You can decide. It's your show. You decide.
I say the second one.
All right.
The first one references the Go-Go Power Outhouse, and I appreciate that.
Move along.
David from Houston.
Let's talk about the email we're not reading. One,
the email we were doing is from Smasher. Says, I've been thinking about this question since the last episode, whenever you wrote this in. If you could do a Trading Places style mind-body swap between a Marvel and DC character, who would it be and why? How would these personalities change, powers remain with the characters' bodies, affect the respective characters' plot lines and overall shtick?
I have an answer.
Well,
that's good because I'm still working out what the question is.
Well, Trading Places is not a body swap. It's not a Freaky Friday.
Okay.
I think they're suggesting a Freaky Friday, not a Trading Places.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're or any of those.
Trading Places.
17 again, vice versa.
Trading Places is a fish out of water.
Right.
Yeah.
Double blind. And then,
or there was that movie with Vince Vaughn recently, Freaky. That's like,
I watched it.
I liked it. I thought it was cute.
It was like,
I mean, it wasn't great, but it was fine.
Stay on target.
No, it was fine.
Batman and Moon Knight, right? Because Mark Spector would just think like, oh, I guess I'm a bat guy now. And like Mark Spector would totally roll with it. And Bruce Wayne would be really frustrated. And I think that would be interesting.
I think Mark Spector would be like, oh, this is much easier. I like anybody else would be really stressed out to be in Batman's head, but he'd be like, oh, this is relaxing, this is good. That's a hard question.
Well, that's the question. Does his dissociative disorder go with him?
Probably, but I also think he would just roll with it and be like, okay, I guess like a bat personality is one of my new, like, that's a new thing I just incorporate into my whole, like, the overall shtick, as Smasher suggests.
Is dissociative disorder, I mean, it's got to be chemical in nature, yes?
I don't know.
I mean, because if it is, then no, it doesn't go with him. And if it is, you know.
But I also feel like Bruce Wayne would roll with, if Bruce Wayne suddenly was in a, his mental state was in a brain that was affected by that disorder, I also think Bruce Wayne would roll with it well enough that it would be interesting.
Okay, so here's what I would say, and this is just a thing that I thought of, and I thought, that's interesting. Clark Kent and Clint Barton.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you've got Clint Barton all of a sudden with the powers of a god and the sun, and then you have Superman who would have a normal body but be able to hit things from far away.
But he already can hit things.
And
from
I think
far
that
away.
I think that's interesting. Yeah, but that's all he can do now.
It's true.
And you got Clint, you know. And by the way, this is '80s, early '90s Clint Barton. This isn't any of this
real
fucking self-aware thing. This is a guy who is has incredible self-esteem issues. You know, is a good guy, wants to do good, but needs approval. You know, overdoes everything to try to prove things, and he's Superman.
And now he's the most powerful being on the planet.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
That actually would be a really interesting story to have to put that much insecurity inside Superman's body.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't end well usually, yeah. But so that's the one that I thought.
What about you, Connor?
I mean, these are all good answers. I don't have a better one. I think the Superman Hawkeye one's a good one.
In a lot of these contexts, there are characters that are sort of the one to one transfer. Like you could do Mockingbird and Black Canary. You could do Selina Kyle and
no point
Felicia Hardy. Like
no point.
But why? They're the same character, right?
I know, but the problem I'm having with this question is that's where my head goes when I start thinking about, like, okay, I'll pick a character from DC or Marvel, and then who would I swap them with? And my brain goes to, their analog, which is not helpful in this context.
So what if Bruce Wayne ends up in Wolverine's body?
They did that. It was called Darkclaw in the Amalgam universe.
He'd be so thrilled. Batman would... I think Bruce Wayne would be like, fuck yes. This is the best thing that ever happened. I'm more compact now. I get healed. I can smell evil.
Yeah.
I don't think Logan would like it. What do you take Ben Grimm and put him in, like, and then...
It's got to be... I mean, that's the whole point of Trading Places, is Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy's characters are not the same person. They're right. Very, very different. So you have to pick very, very different characters. Make this interesting.
Billy Batson and Ben Grimm.
You can't take a male character and put him in a female character's body because it's too many other weird things. Like, all right, I'm going to go in the other room. I'll see you later. You take somebody who's very strong or has certain powers, or, I mean, you could go with a social racial element where you take, you know, Black Panther and you put him in, you know, somebody else who's some white guy, and then there's a thing that's going on there.
Catman,
which makes me think
famous DC character we all know and love. It's an interesting question. It presents some interesting opportunities, but also some interesting obstacles. And I thought it was, yeah.
You could do it within the universe and actually tell, like, I'm sure that's happened, you know, like, and tell stories within the universe where, like, you know, the Flash gets swapped with Blue Beetle.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, all these universes the continuity is so convoluted that, like, you've got a version of the Justice League in the Avengers. They're just called Squadron Supreme. So you could easily play around with this concept, you know.
Well, the cartoon Justice League did a Flash.
Yes. It has a great moment where, I don't know, Josh, if you've watched it, but Lex Luthor in Flash's body takes off the mask, and it's the Wally West version of the Flash, and he's looking in the mirror and he's like, well, I don't know who this is. And he's like disappointed that it's not somebody that he recognizes. It's great.
That's funny.
Good answers. Smasher, thanks for your email. contact@ifanboy.com is where he wrote in, as well as other people. You can write it for this show or for the Media Split show. If it's for Media Split, put that in the title or the subject line of the email. Thanks for writing in. Let's quickly plug some shows. So Josh interviewed Daniel Warren Johnson in the most recent Talksplode, which was our 1,200th show that's currently loaded into our distributor. So it's a lot of shows.
That's not nothing.
And we have other shows that aren't currently on the distributor, like we had... used to do the Don't Miss show and the Make Comic show. So we haven't done more than 1,200 shows, but we have at least 1,200 shows currently available to listen to through our distributor. So that's a lot of shows. But anyway, check out that interview with Danny Warren Johnson, one of our favorite new people in comics. Not only a great creator, but a super nice guy. So check that out. Coming up soon, I believe this coming week, is our next Media Splode show. What's it going to be about? We're not sure yet. We haven't even talked about it, but that's coming to you this week. And then at the end of the month, Josh and Ryan and I are all going to be on Booksplode together to talk about A Contract with God by Will Eisner. So that'll be coming at the end of the
seminal
month.
Work.
I was trying to find the book this morning. I cannot find it. So I might have to buy it. Lindsay's like, what are you looking for? I was looking for this book. She's like, what does it look like? I'm like, I don't really remember. I think it's green.
I mean, it seems like, so your last Media Splode, you talked about the Oscars, and the Oscars have since happened. I don't think nothing really happened at the Oscars. It was kind of a boring show, right?
I can tell you one thing. No one needs to hear us talk about that. No one else needs to talk about it. We could just move along.
I do a podcast called Science Sort Of. In a recent episode that is not out yet, it is currently being edited. I and my buddy Ben Tippett, who wrote a scientific paper on a grandified theory of Superman's powers back in the early aughts, how he got involved with our show. We talked to Ryan North, who is the web cartoonist who does dinosaur comics. People are familiar with that.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I know that name.
And he did Squirrel Girl. That was his big Marvel book. And he has a new nonfiction book out called How to Take Over the World, Practical Schemes and Scientific Solutions for the Aspiring Supervillain. And it's basically him making the bold claim that as a person who is trained in science and has written a lot of supervillains, he now actually knows how to take over the world. And you can do it too if you just buy this book. So go check out my interview with him coming up soon on the feed.
It could backfire on
it. Sure could.
Oh, it's my turn to talk. You can find all of our shows at ifanboy.com, as well as, I was thinking about how I would take over the world, as well as the archive of years of great comic book writing from our talented staff. And Ryan did some stuff too. You can find it with the pick of the week is before the show. Don't know why I do that. I'm so sorry.
Water off a duck's back. Don't even care. hit me again. I do. I can take it. I like spicy food.
I'm instantly guilty, and I'm not good at the back and forth of sort of male camaraderie where you just are mean to each other.
The worst experience I ever had with that was with you when we went mountain biking. Uh-oh. And you had all those Uh-oh. Those Boston bros.
Uh-huh.
And there was like some gentle ring that happened. And I made some joke at one of their expenses and they came at me so hard. And
you don't want to fuck around with those guys.
No, it was terrible. It was
they're born into that. That's a born.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. I remember what you're talking about. I don't remember the specificity of it, but yeah, I don't hang out with
them. They came at me hard enough. I don't want to relive it, but like I was so unprepared for the intensity of the like, hey, fuck you. I was like, whoa, okay, I'm sorry.
They're not nerds. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Follow at iFanboy on Twitter. And
a lot of grievances this episode.
I would love a grievances segment. But you can't prepare a grievance. You can only be reminded of a grievance in midstream, and you have to deal with it then. iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You follow us individually. CS Kilpatrick, J.A. Flanagan, and Ryan Haupt on Instagram, and just old Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, on Twitter. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy to keep up to date on old video show re-uploads. The full-length shows are all uploaded, and they were made to be evergreen, but nobody told my shorts that. So we're just putting minis up this past week. We have, these are current? Yes, the book of the month.
Yep, that's new.
Episode where we talked about Captain America Operation Rebirth.
That's the Wade Garney run.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And the new comics preview for 8/27/2008, or my third wedding anniversary.
Ooh.
Yeah, look at that.
Well, you can go back now and see what comics came out that day.
Yes.
Actually, you can go back and see what comics may or may not have come out that day, because we were too stupid to stop picking indie books that never came out on time.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
I don't think you can complain about your shorts, Josh, when Ron had to do the Sandman episode.
He volunteered.
That was a bit that he volunteered for. The shorts were just us being stupid and not realizing we should be wearing shorts on screen.
From that
angle. Although, to be fair, Ron did not know he was going to do that for the whole show. He agreed to it, though.
Yeah.
He agreed to it. Hey, if you like the show, consider leaving us a review or leaving a star rating. Wherever you listen to podcasts, and Apple Podcasts is the most popular one, but anywhere you listen to podcasts, it does help people find the show. We do thank you for that. This show, for Science Sort of, for any show you listen to, it's a great way to help this your favorite show, or even a show you just like kind of a little bit. You can just help the show out. It takes a second. We do appreciate that. Word of mouth is great. Spreading the iFanboy love is something we appreciate that people do all over the world, and we thank you for that. And that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ryan.
That makes me Josh.
Oh, baby, listen, baby, don't you treat me this away, because I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more.
Yes.
If I check the notes.
Think any astronauts have taken the podcast with them up onto the International Space Station? You said all over the world. Now I'm thinking about, like, where else?
I wish.
What's possible?
That'd be the greatest thing. If you ever listen to our show in space, let us know.
Because I know my show has listeners in Antarctica, and I think that's amazing. And so, I love being on all seven continents, but I think you guys might have what it takes to go space station.
I mean, you're in space, you're somewhat of a nerd. Somebody in space read comic books.
Sure.
I would, I would hope that their current pursuits wouldn't leave them time for this. That would be the only reason why it wouldn't happen.
Listen, you're out there on doing your spacewalk. It's mindless. You got to listen to something.
Yep.
Josh makes a dumb joke. You miss your handle hold. You fly off into the vast maw of space, never to be seen again.
I like knowing that the inside of spacesuit helmets have a little nose scratcher. So if you get a little itch, you can like lean your head in a certain direction and get a little little scratch, because you can't scratch your face when you're wearing a big helmet.
Connor just suggested that someone is not only listening to us, but listening to us while on a spacewalk.
It's possible.
While on an untethered spacewalk.
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee you, you're not allowed to do that.
They don't do untethered spacewalks anymore. They had the MMU for a minute. They used it for a couple of space shuttle missions, the manned maneuvering unit, the little jetpacking you.
Yeah, but the kind of guy or girl up there who listens to podcasts while doing their their mission is also the kind to not follow the tether
so
rules.
So George Clooney from Gravity.
They're rebels.
They're not listening to a comic podcast.
Yeah, George Clooney's character was way too cool in Gravity. And he was wearing the MMU that is no longer used. So he was untethered, but I don't believe that's the way it's done anymore.
Yeah, but like I said, this bad boy of space has brought one up with him. Smuggled it up there so he could go on untethered walks to be the bad boy of space. And also listen to our review of the Batman.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had listened to the show on the launch pad. Because I feel like the launch pad's kind of boring. Like, it's a hurry up and wait situation. Right. I mean, Alan Shepard pissed himself. But like...
Well, that wasn't his fault. Gordo Cooper fell asleep, though.
Sure. Last All person right. to go into space alone.
We have to stop this show.
I'm liking it.